I am Heidi Holton, live from the KEXE studios on the Mississippi River in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. We welcome you back to our statewide conversation with Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. It's an opportunity to ask questions about Minnesota's response and plans during this COVID-19 pandemic. Thanks for joining us today. If you didn't get a chance to send in or call in your question this week, you can email COVID@ampers.org or call 612-562-9895. It's made possible by Ampers, a group of 18 community radio stations across the state of Minnesota, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, as well as the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan joins us now. Thanks for being here again.
Absolutely. Good morning.
Another big week. I don't think we ever start talking. We've got a lot to get to, whether it's the special session or education, but I kind of wanted to start off today. Yesterday, I saw in the Leech Lake News from the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe, they had their official statement about school reopening. They said that protecting our elders and vulnerable and ensuring the best for future generations is a core tenet of the Anishinaabe identity. And they've announced that the Leech Lake Tribal College and the Bugnegashig School will reopen with distance learning. And they're asking schools that serve other students of the Leech Lake Band to consider the impacts of reopening on families who have multi-generational households and families with members who have underlying health conditions. And they went on to say that given the uptick in cases we have seen in northern Minnesota in recent weeks, we see no rush to reopen. So even in the week since we talked last, I've realized more about this complexity of schools reopening on workplaces, on our very small workplace here, on coworkers who have to make those decisions. It also affects our work life. And I wonder if you could talk more about that complexity as well as the strong leadership coming out of the Anishinaabe culture and tradition.
For sure. So first of all, that very statement, I think just reflects the really thoughtful and intentional leadership and decision-making that our tribes across Minnesota have been engaged in. You know, we've partnered with them over the last 150 so days in our COVID response, and I think that's right. And, you know, we also haven't seen, and I'm going to knock on some wood here, the kind of uptick in infections and cases in Native communities, at least in the reservation communities that we've seen in Indian country, in other states. And so I do think that again, this approach, thinking about multi-generational families and households, that's certainly my family's household up on White Earth, and also just knowing that mask wearing, practicing good hand washing and social distancing, you know, the real message there has just been, this is how we take care of our relatives and how we take care of, you know, our elders and our loved ones. And that message, I think, has really resonated with Native folks in Minnesota. And I absolutely think that this decision that the, Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe is making is the right one. And that's what we try to do, is to give folks, you know, the data for their local community and some guidelines to be able to determine what's best for their students, their teachers, and their families. So this is exactly what is supposed to happen and how it's supposed to work out. But I also know the complexity of this issue. This is absolutely personal to me. And we got an email that said that we will be going to distance learning for all students in my daughter's district, which is St. Louis Park, and that there will likely be a change to hybrid for kindergarten and through second grade starting at the end of September. So, you know, that gives us some time to plan, but it's hard. I was sad. I'm sad for my kiddo. She misses her friends and she misses school. And I think this is the best decision, and the district was super thoughtful about it. So it's just all hard.
Yeah, Yeah. Well, let's get to some of the listener questions from this week. We did get a few about education. We heard from Katie. She emailed, "My school district is starting back in the fall with a hybrid learning model. They've emphasized that we all have to be flexible. They'll likely shift back and forth between distance learning and back in the schoolroom learning, depending what is going on with COVID. What do you hear from educators about the long-term effects of this so-called flexibility? Isn't this just another word for chaos, or do you think our kids will emerge more resilient? I could see it going either way."
Right. I mean, I think it's important, you know, to respond as this pandemic just continues to evolve. And despite all the difficulty that we're experiencing, if we stay, you know, connected to our friends and families and you know, loved ones and school community, I think we can get through this. But you know, the reality is, I was talking to a guidance counselor in northern Minnesota, and you know, and she just reminded me that now every kid who is alive right now in this state and in this country has an ACE score, an adverse childhood experience score now, because you know what we've been through over the last several months is trauma. And so, you know, as we're thinking about this approach to learning, you know, my hope is that, you know, our districts, both the leaders there and teachers, are also just, you know, using trauma-informed approaches to learning, because our kids are arriving, you know, to either their distance learning experience or to their in-person learning experience by, you know, having gone through a tremendous amount of change and uncertainty over the last several months. And so before they can even get to their learning brain, we have to meet them where they're at with what they've experienced. And so their resiliency, I think, very much depends on how we as adults support them through this experience, both as, you know, parents and relatives, but also through the school community. And, you know, those grades and tests and this, that, and the other thing, that needs to be secondary to, you know, recognizing what these kids are going to and just loving them up. And I think that's the first place for us to start to make sure that resiliency remains intact, knowing that several of our students also have experienced challenges before COVID-19.
Right. Well, we heard from a parent this week. They are noting, they got a note from their school district that if they are doing online learning, they are required, the school district's required to provide free childcare during the day for tier one essential workers, thanks to an executive order from the governor. And they want to know, how do parents prove that they are a tier one essential worker in order to get this kind of help?
Yeah, so back when we started distance learning, we knew that it was really important to keep our essential workers working. And so that absolutely, you know, meant that we needed to elevate them when it came to childcare. So families can work directly with their child's school on just the, on this, as different schools have different policies. For example, some may have to simply show a work badge, and some may need to get a letter from their employer. But we are really committed to making sure that childcare is accessible to every family who needs it, even if that care is not available through their school for various reasons. So if you go to mn.gov/childcare, you can find a whole host of resources there to either connect you with childcare or some FAQs about additional questions. But school districts should be able to tell you what is required for your individual situation.
All right. Another question that came in, someone had heard about parents forming groups of learning pods with other families and hiring teachers for these groups of kids to help with the distance learning. This person said, that's nice for them, but I have to admit, as a divorced mom of two kids with a stretched budget, I just felt like here is yet another area where I cannot keep up with the families my kids go to school with. I'm not trying to be resentful. It's just hard to go through this, especially as my kids are getting older and noticing it more. Any advice?
So, first of all, Mom, you are doing great. And, as a kiddo who grew up with a single mom, I know how hard you work and how effortless you likely make it seem to your children. So thank you. I know it's been hard to get through this time. And listen, I've heard about a whole bunch of different strategies and scenarios and learning pods and hiring tutors and this, that, and the other thing. And, I think learning pods will likely work well for those who have time and space and, frankly, resources and ultimately privilege. And I certainly worry about this gap that we have between communities getting larger. But I think the biggest thing is, like, Mom, know you're doing great, and I know you're doing the best that you can, and that you should stay connected to your school. And if you're not getting the kind of supports that you need from your school and from your district, just keep asking if it's not strong. And our MDE, our Department of Education, also has some additional guidance, and, you know, there are some questions and supports that you can ask for. So go ahead and just, you know, be that mom who keeps asking for what her kids need from the district. We have, certainly high expectations for the kind of support that districts need to be giving families during this time, and you shouldn't be afraid to ask for additional help and support when you need it.
That is Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. You're listening to this statewide conversation about the COVID-19 pandemic and how the state of Minnesota is responding. We had the primaries on Tuesday, and before that, I had a chance to talk to Minnesota Secretary of State Steve Simon. I want to take a little listen to what he had to say before the primary.
So we're voting both in the primary and the general from home. Again, just because, you know, we want to make the polling place just a little bit safer. I kind of view this a little bit as a math problem. We got about 3,000 polling places in Minnesota. We're expecting roughly 3 million voters. So that comes out pretty easily to about 1,000 to 1. In other words, on average, statewide, roughly 1,000 people per polling place. And from a public health standpoint in a pandemic, probably a good idea if we can to get that number down. And so my wife and I are thinking, all right, there's two.
That is Minnesota Secretary of State Steve Simon. So I want your thoughts on voting safety and also questions that have come up about trusting the Postal Service if people are mailing in their ballots.
Sure. So first of all, I just want to, because we just heard from him, just thank Secretary of State Simon. I think he did a tremendous job of making sure that voting was able to happen safely on primary day. We had incredible number of absentee ballots that were also submitted because, here in Minnesota, we like to vote and we like civic engagement, and a pandemic isn't going to stop us from exercising our right to vote. I would just really encourage people as much as they can to request their absentee ballot, do it today, and return it as soon as possible. I think as long as we're not waiting till the last minute, we can make a big difference in the ability to get those ballots on time through the United States Postal Service. And I would also just encourage people to buy some stamps, to use the United States Postal Service, whenever you can. I mean, I hope everyone, regardless of your political party, was just really shocked and disgusted by the president yesterday, just simply admitting that he will not give additional dollars to the United States Postal Service because it may benefit him in the election. It's appalling, and I would just encourage everyone to reach out to your member of Congress and to just name how important this service is. That, these are like any position, right? The who are the people in your neighborhood, right? Like from Sesame Street, from back in the day, these are trusted folks who do their job and do their job well. And we absolutely need to support them during this time so that we can have fair elections.
Yeah, and, you know, especially in rural areas, a lot of elderly people, that's how they're getting their prescription drugs. I mean, this is
right.
really important stuff that's being mailed to people.
It's a huge deal. I mean, you know, it's something I think for a long time we just sort of taken for granted. Well, no more. It's really important that folks do what they can to let people know how important the United States Postal Service is. But it's also important, I just want to take an opportunity to remind folks that they can drop off their absentee ballots at their county election office if they're worried about the ballots getting counted on time as well. So that, you know, if you're a little bit of a procrastinator, you know, that's also an option. But ultimately, once you get your ballot, fill it out and send it in.
Yeah, you can go to mnvotes.org. And what I didn't realize was you can track your ballot in Minnesota to make sure if you are worried about whether it got there or not. And so it's just another level of comfort that your civic duty was counted.
Yep, that's right.
And I just want to say there's some really great Muppet stamps right now, as well as hip-hop stamps. So people should take this opportunity to get some of those.
Heidi, we absolutely have those Muppet stamps, and we have some Marvin Gaye stamps and some Sally Ride stamps. So there's something for everybody.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about politics this week. We had the third special session on Wednesday where Governor Walz extended the peacetime emergency for the fifth time. This was expected, but what wasn't expected was the Senate Republicans not confirming the governor's cabinet member, Department of Labor and Industry Commissioner Nancy Lepping. And Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka accused Lepping of being hostile to businesses during this pandemic. And so I wonder if you would help us understand this situation and whether the special session that is expected next month will be any different. I heard the governor in an interview this week saying that Senate Republicans are now thinking about the Commissioner of Health, Jan Malcolm, as someone who is not doing their job. And it's hard to know what to understand about what's going on in the legislature and the executive branch in Minnesota.
Well, Heidi, I also am having a hard time understanding what's going on in the legislative branch, specifically with Senate Republicans. It was incredibly inappropriate and reckless, frankly, for the Senate Republicans to essentially fire the Department of Labor and Industry Commissioner Nancy Lepping. She is literally the person who is making sure that workers, teachers, nurses, janitors, people who work in meat processing plants, that they are protected in their workplace during a pandemic. So when Senator Gazelka says that, was making it hard to do business, what that actually means is that she was simply doing her job and enforcing the law to protect workers. And that is something that we all should really want during this time. She is incredibly smart. She worked under the Obama administration. When we hired her, she was actually working in Geneva and came back home to Minnesota to lead our department, and is truly a superstar. And it is just infuriating that she was fired. And so the Senate, it is in statute. They can not approve the appointment of a commissioner, and that is what they did. It is clear that Senator Gazelka indicated that every 30 days, as we need to renew the emergency order because we are still in a state of emergency during a pandemic, that they will continue to pick off commissioners. And it is despicable, and people should be horrified that somehow simply because the governor is trying to work to keep people safe, that people like Jan Malcolm, who is literally leading the health response in this moment, or Commissioner Jennifer Ho, who is the Commissioner of Housing, as we are looking at the pandemic and the impact on people experiencing homelessness. And the other thing that Senator Gazelka said on the floor was that He's very upset about the evictions moratorium that is attached to the state of emergency. And that means that you can't lose your house, you can't be removed from your rental property if you can't pay right now. And, you know, the fact that that is something that is upsetting to him during a pandemic where we need to keep people safe and housed, I just, those are not Minnesota values. So, and as you can tell, Heidi, I'm pretty fired up about it.
Yeah. Well, and that also protects landlords too, right? So there's some help for landlords who, if people aren't able to pay, because they also have to pay their bills, but it's going to be hard to fill a spot during a pandemic if they were to evict someone.
That's right. And we also passed, the governor and I allocated $100 million in housing assistance to folks who either are at risk for not being able to pay their mortgage or pay their rent to help folks catch up and to stay on top of it. So, it is not the time to play politics, frankly, when we are in the middle of a pandemic. And I lost a little bit of respect for how things work at the legislature by that decision. It hasn't happened for 12 years, and to do it now is just so inappropriate.
Well, and another reminder that as citizens of Minnesota, you can contact your legislator. There is an election in November where each and every House and Senate member is up for re-election if they are running again. And people can get involved in this. The people that we elect work for us and they want to hear from us. So find out who is the person that represents you, and you can easily find that information online. You just enter your address in and you can get involved that way. So I want to talk about some good stuff that came out from the National Governors Association and Results for America, recognizing Minnesota for their use of evidence and data to improve results for Minnesotans during the pandemic. Tell us about this.
So, you know, we believe that you measure what you care about. And so from the very beginning of the pandemic, the governor has asked for additional data and disaggregation of data around the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm particularly happy that we've been able to disaggregate data more so by race and ethnicity, allowing people to, to be able to determine in communities, if you say Asian, does that mean the Karen community? Does that mean the Hmong community? And we are, constantly working to make that data better and better. And Minnesota is nationally recognized for using good data for good government, even before the pandemic. So it's something that we are committed to and that we will continue to work on. We want Minnesotans to have the kind of information that they need. We want to be really transparent. And, if you don't have good data, it's hard to set goals. So this is something that, and again, as Minnesotans, we're a little humble, and so we don't want to pat ourselves on the back too much. But, people should expect that's the kind of service that they get from their state government.
Yeah, being in the media, I really appreciate that those numbers are available to us every day at 11 o'clock so that we can be reminding people right now that the most confirmed cases in Minnesota are 20 to 29-year-olds and 30 to 39-year-olds are the next. And I think there's just a lot of information that people are getting from other sources, and this is a reliable place for us in the media as well as anybody to go and find out what's actually going on in the state. So that makes sense that award was given out. So let's talk a little bit. We heard from Jim this week. He had a question about the coronavirus itself. He said health officials are making the distinction between surviving COVID and recovering from COVID. It sounds like we are hearing more and more about lingering effects. Do we know how many people who get COVID and it doesn't kill them, but they still have lingering problems, and how serious those problems are?
Well, Jim, we have only known about COVID-19 for less than a year, although it feels like it's sort of been with us forever, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I can't overstate how important it is for Minnesotans of all ages and relative health levels to limit their risk of exposure, because we just don't know. There's so much that we don't know about the long-term effects of COVID-19 And I'm hearing similar stories about lingering respiratory, cardiac, and neurological symptoms. So, like, this is serious, and we still don't have a full picture of the kind of long-term damage that, that this can do. And even, you know, as you mentioned, the young people are the folks who are being exposed and being infected at higher rates now. And I think even if young people are relatively at a relatively low risk of dying, those long-term effects are still incredibly challenging, and especially to, you know, just quality of life overall for the long term. So please wear a mask, wash your hands, practice social distancing, and just take care of yourselves. We are, I know that this pandemic is a drag. I am over it, but it is not over us, and we have to continue to take it seriously.
Yeah, and I've been reading some things about young people and not realizing things like being in a car together is a confined space, and that's a really easy place where the virus can be spread.
That's right. Yep. And if you're in a car, hopefully you're trying to avoid that as much as you can, or people who don't live in the same household as you, wear a mask.
Right.
Open the windows, right? Do whatever you can to try to, you know, limit that risk.
Yeah. And before we go, we had a question about public spaces. Someone said, there are families thinking about squeezing in a camping trip before the school year begins. What do you hear about what is happening with state parks? What do you think about heading to a state park? Is it a good idea or too risky? Thanks for your help.
So I absolutely think that if you can get out there before the start of distance learning again, that you should. And all of our parks, state parks and recreation areas are currently open for day use, but not all of the state park campgrounds are currently open. So just go ahead and check out the website to see which ones are open and which ones are closed. And there are some limits on the sizes of campgrounds as well. But the best place, of course, to go for that information is the DNR website. You know, you should only camp with members of your immediate household, of course. Continue to be mindful of hand washing, mask wearing, and that type of thing. And especially when you're using shared facilities like bathrooms or showers or picnic shelters, those kind of common areas. But camping feels like the kind of thing right now that, you know, it is a great pastime here in Minnesota. It's something that our family enjoys doing. And if you can go out there and take as many precautions as possible, I'd encourage you to get out there before the school year starts. Our state parks are very busy because that's one of the things that we can do right now. But it's been a great thing for my family to do, to just get away for the day and play together a little bit. And I hope you find a great place to camp, and I hope that you can relax and rest a little bit before the beginning of the school year.
Yeah, and be mindful of all those folks that take care of that land, because we've been hearing reports that people are kind of leaving those campsites and those trails with trash and that kind of thing right now, because so many more people are using it. So
that's right. Don't be a jerk, Minnesota.
That's right.
Clean up after yourself.
That needs to be a bumper sticker. Thank you once again for talking with us today. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Heidi.
Okay, have a good week. That was Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. This broadcast is a collaboration of community radio stations throughout the state in partnership with AMPRS, Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities, and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. Listen to this full conversation at kaxe.org, and don't forget, you can ask a question as well. Email covid@ampers.org or call 612-562-9800. 95. I'm Heidi Holton for KAXE, KBXE. Thanks for listening.